You don't like finishing games?
No.
Hey, welcome to episode 174 of Front Seat Gamer. I'm Nick. I'm here with Blake.
Hey, Nick.
And Paul.
Hey.
And a special guest, Camille.
Hello.
Camille, yes. Yeah. See, I asked him about this. I thought I'd been doing it right. I kind of had been doing it right, and now I'm in
You're doing it right.
So, Camille, composer extraordinaire for Path of Exile and other things.
Other things, yes.
Which we might touch on in a little bit. We start every podcast off by talking about what we've been playing. I'll go first real quick. I've been playing Palworld a little bit.
Oh, right. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's the flavor of the month.
A new one? Yeah.
Why
am I not surprised?
Interesting. Well, it's funny because it's not really my kind of game, right? It's a survival game.
It's early access.
This is exactly Blake's kind of game. Blake, have you been playing Palworld?
No, I haven't. Yeah. I've been playing...
have you been playing the other one?
What?
Oh, there's the other one that came out too. And
Enshrouded?
Yeah, that
one.
Yeah,
I have actually, that one appeals more to me than Palworld.
Okay.
But there's Pokemon in Palworld.
There is Pokemon.
Sorry, I mean, there's legally distinct pals in Palworld.
Yeah. Yeah, like they both. The game I want to play.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I have so much to play.
And you've already been playing.
And I've already been playing.
Is it early access, the game you've been playing? Or did it actually launch?
I'm sure Valheim actually came out. I'm quite sure. It must have.
He's been playing Valheim.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
It's a survival game.
Yeah.
It's been at least out for a while, though.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of...
Years. It's been out for years.
Yeah.
Now, before we jump into what Paul and Camille have been playing, I talked to Blake earlier this week, and he told me something very interesting about the way he's been playing Valheim.
Which
is even more in line with the Blake we know and love, which is he plays it like a city management.
Yeah. So I was playing with my friends and, you know, we started off just doing the usual thing, cutting trees and going and getting iron and stuff like that. And we had a deposit of iron basically out in an area and we kept running out there and then running back at night. And everyone was constantly getting lost, getting chased by monsters, running back. And I was like, there must be an easier way. And there is a farmer's plow in the game that you can use to level the ground or raise it. And I was like, what if I just made a road through the forest to this
resource hub.
Yeah, this
slowly building empire.
Yeah, which is what it turned into, because I then built this thing. I put campfires all along it, so it was lit up at night, and campfires would stop monsters spawning too close to it. So it was a safe. It was safe. It was a road. It was a safe
road.
I built a proper road. And then I set up a little resource hub in... the guys had already set up a little resource hub, but it sucked. Because they were we can't stay here because we're constantly getting attacked by monsters at night.
Yeah.
So I fortified it and made it its own little thing. And now got a road going from our main base to this resource thing. And there's also a cart in the game. And my friends had told me, oh, don't bother with that cart. It's useless. Because in previous games, they'd been trying to run it through a forest.
Actual forest. An actual forest with trees and everything.
And things getting in the way. And then, so I was like, surely they wouldn't just put this in the game, to be a completely useless thing. And then you try it on the road, it's perfectly perfect. Works perfect. And that's what we were doing. We were just carting stuff back and forth.
Yeah. And you also organized their chests.
I was getting so into just, creating... creating infrastructure for my friends that I went and reorganized all the loot that we'd had, because we just had chests all around our base just with misc. Random misc loot. And it was it was driving me nuts. And so I spent probably 2 hours one morning when no one else was on, just organizing stuff and building a proper storage thing with signs. Yeah. I had signs that said wood, stone, ammo, whatever, you know. It was all perfectly organized, and I was
I was so happy with it.
And you were having a blast.
I was having a blast. That road as well, the night that I the night that I stopped, the night that I logged off and came up with the idea, I was like, I woke up in the morning like excited to make this thing.
We're going to build a road.
I was like, I'm going to build it. And I built it when no one else was on. And, you know, I had to cut down trees along the way. And it was just like, it was like a full like infrastructure project.
All right, Paul.
It was a great time.
Boy.
I haven't really been playing much.
Oh, yeah. That's true. You've had a big purchase, put it that way.
Yes.
Yep. Lego shoes. No.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I do have Lego shoes.
You do have those. You bought a house.
Yes. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
But that means you haven't had time to do anything other than...
No. So I've been doing like base building, but in a house.
Yeah. Have you built any roads?
No.
They're already pre-built, right?
I've cleared some paths.
Okay. That's good. Yeah. That's good. Have you organized boxes?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So was it fun?
Kind of. It's very satisfying.
Okay.
It's just a lot.
Yeah.
Like all day.
Different type of game.
Yeah. Very different kind of game. Camille, what have you been playing?
Elden Ring, mostly.
Oh, oh dear.
Yes. Like specifically lately. I don't know why. Just the second playthrough.
Second playthrough. Okay. Yeah. Was this a new game plus?
But no. That was second playthrough of different character.
Okay.
Because I wanted to try like completely... contrasting build.
Okay.
Like I started like a pure mage.
Yep.
And now I'm playing like a pure tank. You know, with the full Radahn's armor.
Okay. Yeah.
And both swords.
Uh-huh.
Oh, cool.
So it's very satisfying. It feels different. So it's like I promised myself to play like 30 minutes before sleep, and I end up playing up to 2 hours.
Okay. Now. As you're a listener, you know my thoughts on Elden Ring.
Yeah. I don't think I know it that well, but I Blake mentioned a couple of things which.
I played pure mage as well the first playthrough, and then I did New Game Plus, and New Game Plus I respect to melee, and I was playing with like the, I forget what it's called. It's the sword that basically heals you on kill. It's covered in little arms, and you get it from the giant snake guy.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah.
I think it's insane.
Right, yes. Yeah.
Yes. And I found melee combat to be much more enjoyable, but also easier, which surprised me because everyone was talking about how spells were overpowered.
Yeah. I hear that as well, yeah. It's kind of like a cheating, playing as a mage.
Yeah.
It's a big difference. But I think it's mostly because of how tanky you can get. Yeah. Unless you play more with, you know, dexterity, like light armor or something, and you just want to be quick.
As mage, I played totally dexterity.
The melee
as melee. Yeah. Oh, yeah. As melee, I think I was kind of doing moderate armor.
Mm.
Like, it was about as heavy as I could get without being weighed down, which, you know, I forget what I was using. But you did a fresh playthrough as melee.
Yeah.
How you feel about it? How do these two builds compare?
It's just exploration is stressless.
Stressless?
I mean, not always, but like if it's like open, if it's outdoor, it's almost stressless.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, because it's, of course, you can get sometimes between a couple of giants or something and get squished or something. But I would say. That's something which, and I know the game, not that much, but at least enough to
avoid some of those ambushes stuff. Yeah,
it's pretty much similar when you go to catacombs, but it still gives you that, like with the mage. Many times I was, struggling with flasks and endure the full catacomb and actually get what I want from that place.
Mm-hmm.
And now with this guy. And I went with like really heavy option. I think this armor is the second heaviest.
So do you have the slow roll?
No, I have a medium roll because I've got quite a lot of endurance, and I've got this talisman which increase.
The armaments talisman or whatever.
I don't remember the name of it, but this one. I mean, everything is super heavy because armor, but also swords as well. It's just different type of.
Now, I found melee more fun than spellcasting, but I endured the entire game as a spellcaster. And I don't think my flaws with the things I don't like about Elden Ring are not necessarily tied to my playstyle. But I do think I do find it interesting, the psychological thing where people were like, oh, don't do spellcasting, it's cheating, it's way easier. but you know, my anecdotally, my experience was not the case. Your experience.
Well, I think spells are the thing that's more often got like a broken interaction, right?
Yes.
Like very early on in Elden Ring, there was a staff or something you could get that would just increase your damage by absurd amounts, and that got nerfed. But I think there's been a couple of others as well, and it might just be that typically when they launch, those things are more likely to be broken or have broken interactions that you can leverage.
Possibly. I think a big part of it is people ignore the resource endurance part of spellcasting. If you could ignore flasks, it would probably be overpowered because it's a ranged high damage skill. You can kill a lot of things before it reaches you, but you are losing your capacity to heal because you have to carry a bunch of these mana flasks. Especially early game, you have one, maybe two mana flasks, and you can make it halfway through a dungeon before you run out.
I think the very basic spell is really powerful.
Yes.
Like, you can use it for a long time.
Yes. The Glintstone Shard.
This one. Yeah. And I think it's just for completely new players to the Souls-like games, you know? Like if you start combat and you never played any Souls games, like melee combat, you can get punished like very quickly. If you start underestimating your enemy and suddenly you've got two hits, even if you are you know, melee character.
Sure. Yes.
So I think just keeping enemies at distance, it's something which straight away like the idea of playing as a ranged character. And you don't have to craft anything, any you know, arrows, bolts, and anything.
True.
In this case,
although are bows good? Because I got one. I tried using one. The damage is terrible. The range is hard to use. It takes 7 or 8 seconds between shots. It seemed completely.
I literally only ever use bows to pull enemies towards me. That's it.
And they outrange spells. That's the advantage.
It's just the most appealing for someone who has no experience with that game.
I guess are there bow main characters? Like, can you build a character who in combat uses bows and basically that's it?
I don't think I can answer this question because I can only play, you know, mage and melee.
You're not an Elden Ring expert?
No, but no means. I don't think you can be an expert with this game if you have for 150 hours so far for the two characters.
Yeah.
That's I've seen nothing. I feel like I've seen nothing. Like every time I go somewhere, I discover some completely new things. Mm. Even though it's a second playthrough.
Mm. So. Okay. What do you like about Elden Ring?
What I don't like about Elden Ring.
Oh, okay.
I mean, no. It's when it comes to what I like, it's pretty much everything at this point. I just like how immersive it is when it comes to exploration.
Sure.
Still, keeping the Dark Souls vibes.
Okay.
So you get the best of both Dark Souls and the games, let's say like Witcher or something. Mm. I mean, visually it's appealing. Yep. Audio is great. Music is mostly great.
Do you like the way the quests work?
Yeah, here we go. because it's an Elden Ring Souls games, I would say.
That's a weird caveat, right?
I would explain. I mean, it's the unknown, I think. I think 2 days ago, I was aware of that boss, but I finally discovered how to get to that boss.
Which boss?
The Lord of the Blood. Lord of Blood, Mog, I think that's the name.
Oh, okay. I think he's like in a secret castle in the underground, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like a.
I haven't done that one. I know, but I know about
that one. So I discovered where is the entrance to get to his to that part of the underground realm.
It's a big pantheon looking thing, right?
Parthenon,
maybe. Rather.
So when you think about this, like how big this place is,
yep.
And how many interesting things you can find there, and the boss itself, and it's like you can easily miss this, like okay. so easily.
Let me ask you, how did you find the boss? And I don't mean like within the game.
Yeah.
Did you stumble across the boss, or did you use a guide?
No, I what I do in Elden Ring, which yeah. I don't do in other games that yeah. much, or sometimes at all, is basically scouting everything.
Yeah.
Like, that's the first thing which I do when I get to the new area.
Yeah.
I just ride on a horse, on torrent around, yeah. and just try to get, like, all, you know, things which I can pick up from the ground.
Yep.
And try to find some entrances and so on.
Yeah, cool.
You know what I do like about Elden Ring?
But that's the second playthrough. And, this is the... I don't remember the name of this snow-filled grounds where you find this. It's the path to...
To the big cauldron-looking thing?
To Malinia, to the Helic tree.
Oh, yes, yeah, the Helic tree, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
so the down snow area.
Yeah, so at the first playthrough, I didn't know about this place at all. Uh-huh. You know, to get the medallion,
yep.
Mm-hmm. to get a different path with the lift.
Yeah.
So with the second playthrough, I just scan everything, and it gives me a lot of satisfaction. You know,
sure.
that's what I like about Elden Ring, and that's why I don't have a problem with the way how quest works, because I would just keep going around, and if I hit the wall because something yep. is hard, I just go somewhere else.
Sure. Do you feel like there's a logic to the quests?
I don't know.
So, because here's look, there's the example I talked to Blake about earlier this week, is the wolf quest. Blythe is the character's name.
Mm-hmm.
Like the way it starts off, you go to it's like the eastern part of Limgrave. There's like a little ruined church,
mm-hmm.
and you hear howling.
Yeah,
and then after you've heard the howling, you have to go back to the like church near your starting point and talk to the NPC there about the howling, and he gives you a gesture. And it's like a finger snapping gesture.
Yeah.
And then you go and you do the finger snapping gesture at the church, and the wolf hops down from the roof. Nothing tells you any of this.
Yeah.
And the only way you can do this is for you to notice that there's howling.
Yeah.
Which is not the only place in the game where there's howling, because there's wolves around.
Yeah.
So there's lots of wolves enemies. So you have to notice that this is a different kind of howling, or that this is a significant howling.
I'd say most people would, though, notice that their howling was different.
Maybe. I didn't. I did this because there was a guide. And I was like,
I looked up the guide to figure out what the howling thing was.
Okay. Interesting. But then you have to go back to starting location, an area yeah. you've probably completed stuff in. You've out-leveled it. You don't really have a reason to go back to this location, except for this quest. And he gives you a gesture, which you can, you know, whatever. You go do the gesture there, and the quest is unlocked. But the steps are so obtuse. It's a bit like, go to the place, hear the clue, know to go back to the starting place and talk to this NPC, and then...
Yeah.
And then the
quest I get what you mean. I mean, it's insane. But
yes.
But you just told me about this. I didn't know about this. And right. I want to try this, okay. you know, today. So,
did you meet the wolf guy at all?
I think so. If it's the guy who...
it's part of the Rani quest line.
Yeah, he helped you with Radahn.
Yeah. Mm. And then you fight yeah. him later yeah. for some reason.
That's oh, I didn't I fight with him. I think he died with... I don't know. I don't even know what happened with him. You know, I think I was summoning everyone for Radahn's
yep.
fight,
yep.
and I have no idea what happened with them.
If they die during the fight, I think they're still alive.
Okay.
Yeah,
because
the
makes sense, because you can summon
the jar.
Yeah, but yeah. You've seen that jar later on.
Alexander the jar guy.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I remember yeah. The small quest like helping him.
Yeah, knock him out of the hole.
Yeah.
Which.
Yeah.
Why does he get in the hole?
I never got him out of the hole, I don't think. I remember finding him and being like, what the hell?
He hints pretty... That one's a quest I forgive, because it's like he hints pretty heavily. He says, get behind me and do a big, powerful attack.
Mm. Well, maybe I did do that then.
He's also a guy that, like, he calls out to you
yeah.
when you're walking by.
Yeah.
Mm.
And he is in a spot that, if he didn't do that, would probably be kind of hard to find.
Yep.
Mm.
That's true.
But still, for the Elden Ring standards, I think it's very... clear.
That was really clear.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, like, I've been playing Persona 5. and there are like quests and tasks in there, and some of them require you to kind of do some thinking, talk to the NPCs and wander around, but it feels a lot more logical to me, and it doesn't require you to go back to your starting place and talk to someone who's unrelated.
You would like a hint, right?
No, I don't even know that I want a hint. What I want is for it to make sense.
Like if you taking that wolf guy quest, if you heard you hear that howling, right? What would you want that guides you to that guy?
Here's a couple things gives you the gesture. Pan the camera up when you hear that howling. Like it takes the.
Is he actually even there?
Yeah,
he's at the top of the thing.
Can you see him?
Yeah, you can see him.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
You just have to look up.
I just remember I spent ages trying to climb the walls.
I didn't even know he was up there.
I guess then you have to have this camera panning in different places, and it's like, they have to make a decision whether they will implement something like this at all, and they have to. I think they should use this quite a lot.
Yeah,
and I think that. Like the idea is great to guide, but it's like so misfitting to the
Elden Ring. It is a change to the Elden Ring dynamic. Yeah. There's a risk that it removes that immersion because it takes the control away from the player.
I think as a response to what you said, if I would struggle with quests like this in other games, I would have the same reaction.
Yeah,
which is just this is a very different type of game. It's like very specific, very unique, and. That's why I can forgive that, and I don't think I care enough about the story.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the story is important, but it's like it's depicted and like presented differently. It's not like you don't have a you don't talk you, your character doesn't talk.
That's true in Zelda.
True.
Oh God.
Okay.
What was it? 23 minutes into
the podcast. It's true in Chrono Trigger. It's true in a lot of
time
RPGs.
For tennis game.
Gordon Freeman doesn't talk, right?
Yeah.
And also Gordon Freeman, they don't pull focus away from Gordon Freeman. They don't.
Yeah. I think it's just one of many things which makes story like. You experience it a little bit differently, and then you have a side quest. When it comes to a main quest, I can agree a little bit with what you're saying. Like especially when it comes to getting the first medallion.
Remember where I got it.
First medallion for the first lift.
You scale the wall.
You have two forts or something, and you have to find some random.
That's right. The first one is like East Lim Grave or something like that. Maybe it's like the Southern Peninsula.
But the second one is in Kaelid, I think, and next to giant dragon, like a
is
dragon
that where
nest.
It was? I thought it was you. I thought it was in the section above the lift. Because there's two different medallions. Mm-hmm. Is the other thing.
No, we're talking about the first medallion. Yeah. Dectus or something like this.
Yeah,
I don't remember the name.
Yeah,
So yeah, the pieces are far from each other, and they're in the places where there's like pretty much almost no indication. Except, I mean, you have the kind of like an arrow next to each of the side of grace.
Yeah.
So I think you just have to really treat this seriously.
Sure.
Yeah, but it's like that. That's it. It's like this specific thing could block you for a long time if you don't check any websites or so on.
I don't mind that one because there is a workaround, and I didn't get the medallion the first time. I didn't get the medallion.
I don't even know that there's
you can scale the wall, right? There's a cave, and then there's like a path along the wall, and you can climb it, so you can kind of ignore that lift.
Okay.
That's what I was doing when I stopped playing. I was like climbing up that wall thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's hard.
Yeah.
It's kind of annoying. but you know, there's a path forward.
Yeah.
But then Blake, for example, didn't know you could get spell casting for ages.
Yeah.
Because it requires you to go to the church at the start of Limgrave at night.
Hmm.
So you have to go to a specific location at a specific time. At the very start of the game, and you know, if you're reasonably well versed in FromSoft games like Blake is, you might rush past it because you've killed all the things there. And then you'll just never get a key mechanic in the game.
Yeah, it took me ages because I was finding... I found spell vendors.
Yeah.
Like, there was a woman down in some ruins, and she's like, oh, I can teach you stuff. And I was just like, great. And then...
It's specifically the summoning bell, actually, I think, right? It's not spells. Because you can get
spells. Was it summoning?
I think it's spell. It's the little spirit bell.
Oh, maybe. It was something. There was something key.
By the way.
That I was not getting for a long time. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was the
summon. And then I think I literally saw online some.
Yeah, you said spellcasting, but it's about summoning.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the summoning.
Yeah.
But that's a pretty core feature. Like
It is. But
you can play without it, sure.
Yeah.
But it's a bit like saying, no shields.
Well, because you're finding all these summons. I remember this. You're finding all these summons.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, great. At some point, I will be able to use these.
Got
to
beat a boss or something.
And yeah, and like,
no, you have,
that like, point just never came. And I was like, what? How do I do this? And I think I did eventually just like look it up online.
I had a similar thing, except mine was even more core, and it was leveling up. I the first time I played, I went off to the coast, like head west a little bit, and there's like caves along the coast because there's like reasonably enemies there. Caves there are doable, and I thought, okay, well I'll clear out some caves, I'll get some souls, and at some point, I'll be able to use the soul, spend them somehow. And the requirement for getting the ability to level up is you go and find a specific number of sites of grace. But it doesn't include the ones in caves for some reason. It just doesn't include them.
Because I do remember it's the lady comes and visits you when you... Is that right? The lady comes and visits you when you go to one of them. But I remember talking to a friend of mine and... That lady visited him at a different site of grace.
Yeah.
Depending on how many. Number. Yeah.
But it has to be ones in the overworld, not ones
not in
it's
caves.
Next to
and
the
isn't
caves,
it only like two or something?
Yeah, that's where it happened for me. Yeah.
But the game kind of like keeps you pushing.
It sort of guides you in that direction.
By that giant thing, it really early on.
You can. If you've touched two other sites of grace, it might be two. But either way, I touched a bunch.
But
just not the right ones.
Yep.
And so I had like 7,000, 8,000 souls, something like that, which is a lot at the start of the game.
Yeah, I understand.
And,
for sure,
you know, every time I die, I'm like, I don't want to lose them.
Yep.
Anyway.
Yeah, losing Heaps of Runes is one of the most depressing things.
It is rough. It is rough when you're so close to a level up.
And you're always greedy, you know. That's a different thing, the different conversation. But you're like, I would just keep exploring. I would just check one more corner, you know, and then maybe go back to spend those runes.
But even if you, I mean, late game, you can't even spend them, right? You just need a ton of souls or whatever. And it's just, the only thing you can do is risk. Or you go back and you grind. Which is
there's a place in the Helic Tree that's like kind of a very late game.
Yep.
And it's like a paradise for farming.
Okay.
Runes. Yeah.
Is it?
It's all those there's like a prayer room. That's the side of the name of the side of grace.
Yep. It's just at the bottom of the Helic Tree.
And you've got heaps of soldiers, and they're like 2.5K each.
I farmed there.
Oh my god! This is paradise. They're so easy. They usually just sit.
They stay there. You blast them with a couple spells. They die.
Yeah,
and they give you. And they also drop a bunch of items.
Yeah, I think on every level of game, like. You can find a place which you can farm the way that it's actually feels like almost like farming way lower with level, like let's say 50, 40 or something.
Yeah.
Even if it's now a 140 level or something.
Yeah. Is that good though?
It is, because it can be like frustrating when you have to farm forever and... you have a situation when you don't. It's a Dark Souls game. Souls-like game. So the benefit from each level is very small.
Yes.
So
and smaller and smaller with each level as well, because the proportional difference is.
Yeah. Definitely, like gear gets more and more important after time. Yeah.
Good point. Gear.
Yeah.
Upgrading gear.
Yeah.
There's a limited resource.
Yeah,
it can't be refunded.
No.
So if you early game spend your limited resource, badly, you can just end up with a bad build. Right?
You've got all those bells, which gives you ability to buy those stones and
But you can't get ancient dragon stones. You can't get like the.
Yeah, I agree. But when you think about the percentage, how much you get from the last upgrade, it's
minor.
Yes, it's minor. Like,
fair point. But also, isn't by the time you're committing those high level resources, you already sit in your build. You're not like testing it out.
Yeah,
because that was the thing with me, is like I'd get a new weapon, and I would have to upgrade it a little bit to even get it on par to test it out, and I'd be committing resources that at the time were, you know, scarce.
Yeah,
but then you get to a point where you can start just buying some of those resources, and then I'm like, oh great, now I can test out a whole bunch of like weapons.
Uh-huh.
You know, but then at some point, I'm assuming it will get you basically are locked into the build that you're.
At what point does that come?
I don't know.
Because
I think you have a lot of flexibility. Like I keep testing weapons throughout the whole playthrough now, and it's just you just have to keep in mind that you can't upgrade to +10. You should test with +8 usually, because that's I think as high as you can get. I might be wrong. As high as you can get when it comes to getting bell and buying materials. And between +8 and +10, it's not enough difference to not being able like test. Like it's
sure.
I think it comes at the end comes to what works for you, like what gives you more satisfaction, you know?
Yeah.
What works with your play style and that sort of thing. I end up going with like a bleed build, so I was upgrading all the bleed thing, and I was into like the katana and stuff, and
yeah,
the ailments great. In that game.
But that sounds very cool. I wanted to try something like this.
So that's very cool.
It's definitely more interesting than you know those two contrasting full mage or full melee. Maybe I think third one.
You can go full melee and like, oftentimes you'll just implicitly be doing some sort of ailment.
Yeah, for sure. Katana specifically, like going something slightly different, like not 100% tanky, you know, colossal weapons or something.
Do you have a favorite fight in that game?
Every fight is favorite when it's easy in this game. You know,
when it's easy, interesting.
When you beat it first time, first
Yeah. I mean. I actually like fighting dragons in this game, because they're definitely not the hardest.
Stay between the legs.
Yeah. One thing. Yeah. Depends on who you play as, or you use the. You know, I call this a shaper beam.
Ezur's comet.
Do you
do the infinite mana Ezur's comet?
Yeah. With
flask, I think that might be why people think that spellcasting.
I was thinking the combination.
But you've got to build up to that, right?
Yeah, you do. You absolutely do.
It's not like,
and in fact, it's like also part of a quest.
Yeah,
and you have to find this dude's body in a like the third last area of the game.
So you go a significant portion of the game without this infinite mana.
I think it could be like mid game, but the problem is, I mean, it's a bit overrated. Like when you unleash, you're very vulnerable.
You're just standing there.
Yeah, for any fast enemies which do any like moves,
you can't re-aim.
That's why against dragons, before they even start doing anything. Dragons are like slow with the first reactions, and then they just keep warming up and doing like crazy stuff.
I still think this game is overrated.
The other three of us really like it.
I'm okay with being wrong.
Hey, look, isn't it one of the top 10 games of the last 20 years or something?
I saw
rated somewhere.
This is the reason I saw Blake about it, because there was a Reddit post of people voting for their top 25 games of the 21st century, and there were at least two, possibly three, FromSoft. Specifically Dark Souls and Elden Ring games.
Yeah, probably Sekiro as well.
That was in there, and I just think...
Dark Souls 3 is Sekiro and Elden Ring, I think.
I just don't agree.
Yeah.
I just hard disagree.
What was the number one on that list? Do you remember?
I don't remember.
You were just so annoyed that any FromSoft game made it to that list.
It might have been like The Last of Us 2 or Red Dead Redemption.
What about Baldur's Gate?
Baldur's Gate 3, I'm pretty sure, was on there.
Okay. That's another one which I played. I think not lately, but yeah. Some, like, I don't know, like a month ago, like finished fully. Yeah.
Wonderful game.
Yeah.
Much better
than Baldur's Gate. But we can't. I don't think we can argue much here. So
that one I think we'll probably agree on. Hey, why don't we talk a little bit about your work? Because we've never had like a composer on here, or even really a musician, as far as I'm aware.
Andrew?
Was Andrew on here?
Yeah.
Was I on here when Andrew was on here?
I'm pretty sure.
Oh, well, it was too long ago. Let's talk about it anyway.
Yeah, I think that was a long time ago, yeah.
What does your day-to-day look like?
Yeah, it's like bouncing between actual composition,
yeah.
Sorting references, listening to what I've done so far, so to keep things more consistent.
Yep.
Making notes, writing briefs, and then occasionally, talking with designers and anyone who can help me with something
giving
related.
Giving you context.
Yeah. Like we used to talk quite a bit before.
Usually the start of a patch cycle.
Yeah, trying to figure out the story.
And I might have a vague idea of the boss or something.
Yeah, both lore wise and design wise to get idea about mechanics. Yeah.
Do when you're how important is consistency? Because I would imagine that like across multiple areas of some sort of subzone, like Belly of the Beast. Has like three levels to it. You'd want consistency, but maybe, you know, some ascension of stakes or whatever. But is it important for, say, Belly of the Beast to sound the same as Oriath?
No, I mean, it's a different sound set, different instruments. I mean, POE1 is as consistent as it could. I wouldn't say it could be way better. I think that the POE2 is it's a better example. I like, you know, because starting like from the beginning and like planning each of act acts in terms of a macro scale within an act and then the major scale to get idea about consistency across the entire game. But also like thinking about the POE1 as well, because it's not like
you want to call back to it.
Yeah, to the certain degree. It's just like it's it is mostly fresh, but there is some elements of evolution, you know. So you want to take everything into consideration and then see what actually matter.
So, I mean, POE is kind of, a lot of the time it feels a bit orchestral, heavy sort of, acoustic instruments. But from memory, I think you started doing, like, electronica, right?
Yeah, electronic elements have been part of the POE
music. Belly of the Beast,
I remember. Pretty much from the beginning. But I think with the POE2, this is a more of a thing. It's more of a like experimentation of some granular synthesis, like using organic elements and like using a different processing to make it sound completely different. Like you have a short sample of some ethnic horn, and then you make it sound like completely different. Like it's almost like a bending, detuned synth. So that sort of things, but it still sounds organic.
Do you, when you're doing something like that, when you're choosing a specific, say, a specific instrument to synth up, let's say?
There are moments when I know what I want to do and how I can do this. But many times it's like just trying things, so, you know. Like, I know what I want to do with processing, but I might not know what source sound will be good for that. But
Just quickly, do you use a lot of plugins for that? Or
It's like a POE is... mostly based on the virtual instruments. We have some live recordings, but again, the virtual instruments are based on the live recordings mostly.
What live recordings Like, are there examples in game now?
Well, we recorded some elements for Karui. Yeah. So that was like a lot of recordings, a lot of like building a tool set for that. So it's not just for what I actually needed, but also for future content as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Nice.
Because it's so in that. What was it? The Sorceress. Well, in that teaser trailer, the Karui teaser trailer, there was a lot of vocals in the
In the
soundtrack that was on that. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's one of those more unique things. But then the way how you've got those things mixed, like you could expect vocals like this normally in more like unplugged environment. You know, like it's. But here you have, together with the big drums, together with some distorted horns or something, and then the vocals are processed differently. It just sounds a little bit different than you could expect.
How often do we have vocals in, well, other than the actual, like, NPCs, but in the soundtrack, how often do we actually have vocals?
There's another example, also from PO2, I think that was a part of the... of mine and Kane's talk during ExileCon, having a siren's voice, singing a tune.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting thing because it doesn't sound like it comes from the music. It's like place in the space.
Yeah.
Comes from the source. But in the same time, with the way how I composed this was like writing a tune, having a mock-up of virtual instrument playing around, and having this as a really like a one of the instruments.
That's cool.
But then we recorded the real voice and separated this. But then one day for the soundtrack, it will probably come back as a one thing again. Instead of
have a play from a different source in the soundtrack.
Yeah.
When you're composing, how often are you putting that music in game and playing around with it and just seeing how it sounds in the game space?
I basically, when I compose, I have a game on, you know, on the one screen.
Right. And then you have headphones on.
Yeah, actually, no headphones. I just have this game with usually with muted music.
Yeah.
If there's no music there, it doesn't matter really.
Sure.
But sometimes I might have some placeholder there, and just listen to ambience and see the game move around. Like it's almost like responding to this. Let's say you've got a Karui and you've got some, and I start playing with some elements together and sync. Like you get instant response.
Yeah,
you know. And then I try to like tune everything to that. Like how. Acoustically, it will sound good, like a reverb wise, echo, like how
like
what other instruments will fit, like some drones and things. So, yeah, it's just straight away getting idea if something fits, even if it's single instrument.
Interesting. That's fascinating.
Is this something that can really only be done when like an area is much further in development? But like doing that to a gray box area that's all pink cubes
would be
impossible. Yeah. Even if you know, this is a cool, this is a...
Stare at a picture of the concept art.
That's the thing. We have amazing concept artists.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have a concept art which is so close to how it will look later on in the game. Sometimes it's enough. It's enough to start. Mm. It's enough to get idea what instruments I want.
Yep.
It's not enough to tune everything the way it sounds right. It fits there in that space.
Yeah.
But it's definitely enough to start.
So it's much like if the concept is basically kind of like a rough look of what the area is like, you can create a rough kind of feel for the music based on the area.
You just have to be careful because... you said rough, but actually it's maybe too polished. When it comes to when you have a concert art, it can give you a different feeling.
Yeah.
So you have to be a little bit careful. And the main thing is that you don't have monsters around, and they can really alter your experience. So,
yeah.
When you're composing, starting a track from scratch, do you? Have a set process? Do you start with rhythm? Do you start with melody? Or do you mix it up?
I mixed up. I think like it depends on what source you have, what you have to work on. Like if it's a boss track, I might start with some rhythm because I just want to like emphasize this specific part of it.
Yeah.
But usually what I want to do first is just to write a brief for myself. You know, to because like when you watch concepts or so you see actual thing in the game.
Yeah.
It's way faster to write down with your with words than actually start composing. You don't have to stick to that, obviously, but it's just way easier to have some rules. Like, I write, I don't want this one to have like cheesy trumpet on top.
Sure.
Of it. You know, like because it just
and
doesn't.
Your hands slowly drifting over the trumpet. And you look over the page. And, oh no.
Yeah. It's just that's the sort of things which you want to. The more freedom you have, the harder is to actually make anything.
Oh, yeah.
You need to narrow down this to absolute minimum.
Yeah.
And then it's fine to break those rules, but just having any starting point.
It's a good starting point, yeah. Let's talk a little bit about your current body of work. Do you have... I'm curious if you've got a track that you're... Maybe it's your favorite that you've done, like your proudest piece. And also maybe your least favorite. If there's one that you look back and you go, oh, I wish I hadn't done that.
I think for me, my favorite pieces are those which are not yet released. I can't really change anything.
What about like a favorite trailer soundtrack?
Because
those stand out.
I don't know. Maybe... Siege of the Atlas, maybe Legion, maybe it's just those tracks which I don't feel like complaining that much. It's like I listen to those pieces and I don't like analyze too much like what I could
which
do.
Is hard when it's something you made.
Because I always like especially with the PoE2 is like constant iterations, like going back listening and especially when you have a process for a few years.
Yeah.
It's like some pieces are like 4 years old.
Mm. Yeah.
You know? So it just feels different. But
do you go back and redo stuff that you did 4 years ago because you feel like you can do better now?
I don't have time for that. I wish. I really
one
wish.
Guy making all the music.
Yeah, that's true. Because environment art, I feel like that all the time.
I mean, for PoE1, not really, but I have, like, there's at least 20 pieces in PoE1, which if I have time, I would remake like straight away.
At
least 20. I would say it's the most of them.
Has your musical taste changed since you started working on PoE?
I think so. It that's a really hard question. I think we get more experience listening to new stuff and like adding things, but I don't think like my general direction change, like what I like to listen, like, because when I check my playlist, I keep coming back to specific things. Like if we talk about what I just listen, which is like completely unrelated to me or to what I do, I don't think those things change much.
Okay,
but when it comes to strictly work, that's like a evolution,
What do you listen to?
I mean, like soundtrack has all the genres.
Yeah,
and that's the first thing.
So you listen to a lot of soundtracks?
Yeah, I do. It's like trying to have two things at once. So like enjoying, because I also want to enjoy that as well. But
then it's also work, right?
You're breaking it down. Yeah, getting references. You know, then you have a situation when you just drive a car and you have a workout, and you know, I can have some synth wave or something. I can have some drum and bass. I can have some old stuff like Linkin Park. I can there's a lot of things. I think it's just in most of the genres, I have something which I specifically like, and they have something in common, but it's not related to the genre.
Sure.
At all.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite genre?
No.
Do you have a favorite band or song, or is it just? I mean, I imagine, you know, you work in music, you have to have an extremely broad base of knowledge.
The questions like what is your favorite song are the most difficult. Yes. You know, I could just you know, take my phone and tell you what I what I listened in the last.
I'm curious what has been most listened to in your life.
And it could be probably some soundtrack, you know, like some classics, like you know, some Lord of the Rings, No, that's not my favorite, but it's like one of those things which I listened so many times. Maybe some stuff which Hans Zimmer did, like, you know, something from Interstellar or something. Mm. Like I think there's so many that when I mention something, if I listen to that podcast later on, I will be like, wait a minute. No, there's something which, yeah.
Well, okay. Well, you know, we've been talking about an overrated game, Elden Ring. Thank you. Do you think there's a soundtrack or a composer that you feel maybe gets a little more credit than they're due?
Too much credit.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm
curious, though.
What about the opposite?
Yeah. Do you have someone who you think is underrated? Oh, he's digging through his mind library right now.
Just in a very general way to say that, I feel like video game composers are very underrated comparing to film composers.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's like a general thing. It's getting way better, right?
Yeah.
Like, we get way more credits now. Like the music is more for video games, it's more popular. Games are way more popular.
Yep.
The budget is more bigger. So it's getting better. But what I'm saying is, like, I think video game composers are more keen to do some crazy experiments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not saying that the film composers are not. It's just those on the top level, the most popular ones.
I remember watching an interview, I think it might have been with, oh my gosh, I've forgotten his name. He composed The Simpsons theme. He's an Oingo Boingo. You know who I'm talking about?
Oh, you mean, was he the voice of Jack Skellington?
I don't think so.
He was an Oingo
Boingo. Oingo Boingo?
Yeah. Is he? I'm pretty sure he was.
Anyway, he composed the music for that movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, that composer was talking about how there was a tendency in film post-production for temp track to steer the direction of soundtracks in a way that was frustrating for composers.
Mm.
I wonder if that is like a contributing factor, is just the method. Like in games, I don't know. I've never worked on a game where they used temp soundtrack from a different game, for example.
That's a thing as well. Yeah. But it's, I think it's for a linear picture more of a thing.
Yeah.
Because I think, like I said, the film composers are gets more credits and experiment less. But actually, then you have to consider this another thing, which is deadlines.
Yes,
it's completely different way of like you know, producing so much in such a short time. So you need to use some shortcuts. You have attempt tracks, which sometimes help. To get the music done as well, because like, what is the fastest way to tell what producers and directors wants?
Yeah,
like, okay, just make this Marvel piece.
Yeah,
make the same way. Yeah. So it's tricky. It's just a tricky thing. For games, you get temp tracks as well, for sure. For trailers, for things. And sometimes, what is a good way of using temp track is when it comes mostly from composer, to set up like a sketch, like have some structure, and then you completely get rid of that. You intentionally you can go away from that because you know exactly where you started.
Yeah.
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 Interesting.
It's like with the inspiration, it's actually a great way to, you start with the copy, but then you end up with something completely different.
Right.
Because you are aware that you, what's the source.
Yeah, you're going against the grain very
intentionally. Yeah, yeah. While when you have a spontaneous creation, it can be way more tricky.
You can converge a little bit. Yeah,
You can actually accidentally get too close to something.
Right.
Because something is, in your mind, somewhere there.
You've seen this 1,000 times and it just starts leaking out, and no matter what you do.
Oh my God, I wrote such a good melody.
That's the Beatles. I've heard that.
It's not mine.
That's Hey Jude.
That's like a typical thing, you know? Yeah. So that's sometimes like controlled inspiration, like getting rid of that and completely going almost opposite, but having some element which gave you the idea how to start. Starting is the hardest part.
Let's talk a little bit about work outside of POE.
Yeah.
Now, you and I worked on a game.
Age
of Darkness. Yes. We didn't really work together.
Yes.
Exactly. But
we planned to work together, and but we actually didn't.
So. Yeah. Because I think you kind of built the sound font, right? You built the sound. But did you... And I think you did the composition for the early access launch, right?
Yeah.
I'm not sure how the pipeline worked after that point. My understanding, and I might be completely wrong on this, but you built sort of a sound font, and you kind of gave direction to freelancers. So you worked
No. I made pretty much everything. It's
the
idea was that because it's very granular.
Yes.
So when it comes to arranging that in the game and like hooking with things, was up to guys from PlaySide. So.
Right. That's right, because there's a lot of music stuff tied to actions, right?
I was giving feedback. I had some ideas, but I wouldn't say the way how the music works in the game as my thing.
Right.
My thing was to create a toolkit, which is like mostly like segments or sometimes layers, and have the general idea. Like I needed to like hit the right spot with the mood and with sound palette, and we had some cinematics.
Yeah,
the cinematics are different things. It's just typical linear scoring for me, so it was my thing. But when it comes to like cooking this, like setting this up, so that's why the dialogue between you and me didn't exist because like how we gonna like make this work in the game that was more like
ultimately on the sound team working separately
But I think you joined a little bit later, right?
I did. So, I joined after early access.
Yeah. So if you would join like at the same time as me, then we would have a long conversation about the mood.
Yes.
And I had that conversation just with the guys from PlaySide back then.
Yeah, and I will say, I worked on that game. I did some okay work on that game. The soundtrack is probably the best part of that game. It's very, very, very good. Camille did an awesome job. The mood when it transitions to night, the rhythm, it's very tense.
But you see the transitions, like how it works. That's many times. So
it's that. The sounds, the choice of instruments, the sort of hollowness of it, the reverb sound, it just sounds great. So I think you did an amazing job.
Thank you.
When you aren't working on games, do you have like your own personal musical projects?
No, not really. I don't have that's. I really wish to have some time to work on something purely as a hobby.
Yeah. So there's no band camp we can send people to.
No. That's just maybe one day. Maybe one day. I just when I don't have when I have time, I just want to spend as much time with my girlfriend and just go outside.
Don't work, right?
Go outside. Like spend time outdoor. You know.
Yeah.
Why
disgusting.
Aren't you working every second of every day?
All right. Well, I have one more question, and if you guys have any. Feel free to jump in. But my last question is, where is the weirdest place inspiration has come? Is there anything where you were like just doing something or you're listening to something, maybe listening to a piece of music that you had not expected to feel would be inspiring and something came to you?
That's a good question, because I'm pretty sure there is something around which is really weird. But you know, sometimes you have some device and make some sound.
Yeah.
And but it's like something like unique.
Mm.
And I just think about specific instrument. It's just like the chain of reaction of like
yes.
Thinking. Like it just bring the idea, which doesn't sound like this device.
Sure.
But
yeah.
It's just
but there's a series of steps to it.
It's
yeah.
a trigger. Yeah.
Yeah.
I really liked walking and listening references. This is the brain start processing things better.
Yeah.
And the surrounding, you know, like whatever you see sometimes can give you some ideas.
Yeah. Now when I'm trying to come up with something weird for my job,
yeah.
Which usually my current work requires me to come up with something new, something I haven't necessarily seen elsewhere, and the best place to do that is the shower.
Shower.
Yeah. Does what? That happen for you as well, or you're
shower
do you compose in the shower?
I no, but I plan days sometimes. Like
okay,
I would start with this, and then
right,
I'll do this.
Right,
and this.
Right,
yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Interesting.
Yeah, because you've got the those 5 minutes or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a kind of famous thing called the shower principle, or where it's like, it's when you're doing something automatically.
Yeah. Plus, it's refreshing.
It's
you know,
refreshing.
It's
a new space. Often, it's bright.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're doing something that doesn't necessarily require thought because you've done it almost every day since you were born. And then your brain just starts going through, I guess, the backlog of things and just throwing weird stuff out.
Yeah. I can tell you that I have this thing which I really hate, but I can't just deal with this. It's like many times the best ideas comes like right before I supposed to leave office. Because it's like there's like specific hour you know, around 6, 7.
Is it because you're running out of time? Is it? Do you think it's the brain putting pressure on you, or
maybe there's no pressure. Maybe because there's no pressure. Maybe because it's like you think, okay, I don't think I can do anything positive anymore, and you start doing things which are more like just small things, like sorting something, and then suddenly it just hits, and you open open session is you are like. But it's I supposed to finish now. You know?
Well, so what do you do then? Do you just keep working? Do you take notes?
I can take notes.
Yeah.
Because that's like podcast ideas. But sometimes it's just you know you have to write this melody or something.
I'll often get ideas in bed.
Yeah.
Like at midnight.
Before, as you're drifting off and you figure out how to go somewhere.
And it wakes me right up, and I put a note on my phone, and I've got some weird notes.
that's the thing. Like, it's getting it out of your brain.
Yeah.
Like even just writing it down has a note, so it's out of your brain and you're not thinking about it.
Yeah.
But what you're saying about having inspiration at like 6 p.m. after work, I get that too, and I reckon it's because the day is essentially over, and like it's kind of like the pressure of like oh we got to get stuff done, got to be productive. That's kind of gone because it's now. After hours, essentially, and now it's almost like you feel more freed up to try different things if something comes into your head.
Stop doing, start thinking.
Yeah.
I have a different theory. I mean, I think both are actually valid, but the main thing is that how your day is structured. Let's say day before, you played some game until late.
Yep.
Then you wake up.
Yeah.
Then you wake up. You go to work. You don't go to work like perfectly 7:30 or 8 or something.
Yeah,
exactly. You try to reanimate your body.
Yeah.
And sometimes sometimes it takes
call the necromancer. He comes in.
And there's everything distract you around that time. Like you want to check everything.
Yeah.
So you try to limit yourself, and then. Suddenly, there's at lunchtime.
Yeah.
And after lunchtime, you have to reanimate your body again. So I think the moment when actually your brain starts working with that sort of way of living is just around 5, maybe.
Would you restructure your day if you could? Like, would you? Is there something you would change to capture?
No,
that?
I mean, if you want to do your job, you would just you have to learn how to do something productive anytime. Anyway, like just like that. When even if you reanimate your body, you just you're more careful about what you pick.
Yeah.
Like when I like to do decision making. Morning.
Yeah.
But not like being like really creative.
Yeah.
Because I'm getting creative later on.
Yeah. Mm.
So decision making, like some technical things. I think the best thing is just go and talk with people when you have something to do, like specifically get information or something, listening to references or checking anything which is not purely spontaneous creation until you feel it, like, because you need to enjoy this in order to make it actually happen. But there's so many different processes which you can do. You just don't do them at the end of the day when you actually want to do something cool. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I'm out of questions. You guys got anything? We're also out of time, so if it's okay if you don't.
I've got a question, and this is a throwback.
Eldering?
Pizza.
Oh, boy.
Oh, pizza. Okay.
When you have leftover pizza,
yeah.
Do you reheat it, or do you have it cold?
I rarely eat pizza, but...
What? Hang on. That's the craziest thing we've ever heard on the podcast.
when I eat... I mostly I just eat the way it is, unless it's like cold. Like really cold, like it was in the fridge.
Yeah, like if it was in the fridge.
Okay, well, I used to reheat the things which you might not even expect to reheat,
but
for like only 20 seconds.
Okay.
Yeah. I just want to get temperature to the point that it's like around the room temperature, maybe lower than room temperature.
Okay.
So I would
hang on. Give me an example food here.
Yogurt.
What? Okay,
no!
Definitely,
you microwave yogurt?
15 seconds.
No!
Totally see this being fine. No.
But yeah. You like it slightly below room temperature.
Yeah.
So it's in the fridge. It's definitely
actually, it's,
well below
no,
room
it's,
temperature.
No, it's just not cold. It's still kind of chill.
Warm?
But no, it's still kind of chill, but it's not cold.
Okay.
Like really cold. Like
Because fridges are like 4 degrees, right? 4 degrees Celsius, roughly.
Yeah, that's
so,
what
so if you can get that yogurt to 10 degree or, you know, maybe less than 10 degrees.
Hang on, how do you reheat your yogurt?
No, you put in microwave.
You're risking explosion, right?
That's wild.
No, it's like 10 seconds or 15 seconds.
I've never met anybody who microwaves their
but
yogurt.
But it's actually...
I mean, neither have I.
It's quite a new thing to me, but it works. It's just,
Who introduced this to you?
What does this do? You don't drink... beer warm because it like it brings out the bitterness, right?
It changes
the flavor profile. A lot of the time, like a cold food, the taste is more muted. Is that the idea? Like,
I think I actually stay away from like really cold things.
Yeah, why?
No reason. I just prefer.
You grew up in Poland. Isn't that part of the culture?
Yeah, -20. Yeah.
And then you moved away, and you were like, never again.
Man, it's been
like piping hot yogurt, please.
It's been like 9 years here. I've changed.
The thing is, I like room temperature water. Like, if I want to drink a lot of water, I'll drink at room temperature.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, same.
But what about in summer when it's like real hot out? Don't you prefer cold water?
If I have super cold water, I can only sip it.
Okay.
Something about drinking like too much of a super really cold thing is too much for me.
This is...
I think it's related, when you work out, right? You want like a room temperature water.
Oh,
you don't want like anything cold. It's just, you don't want to like cool down your body and lose the energy. You know, I don't know if that makes sense, but it's like, I just prefer like take a bottle from the, you know... from the crate, not from the fridge.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm trying to do with the yogurt, so you know?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that is still wild. Microwaving your yogurt. What else? I want to hear another thing you microwave to warm it up. If there's anything.
No, I think that's all.
Specifically yogurt!
I eat yogurt all the time, that's the thing.
Do you have a microwave ice cream? To make it easier to...
No!
Like, sometimes it's, like, hard, right?
And it's
like
just cream.
Okay, I wouldn't go for microwaving ice cream. I want them cold. Yeah, because it's like the
even Camille has limits.
Yeah,
I know what you're saying, because sometimes it depends on the temperature of your freezer. Sure.
Sometimes it's hard as shit. You just like you could, your spoon's bending because you're trying to scoop it out. So you just like
buying cheap ice cream.
What you should
try vegan ice cream, which is maybe the problem.
Is it all coconut based?
Nah,
but then you can just wait.
Another one's like flour. No. Have you had the cauliflower vegan ice cream?
I refuse.
It's good.
Is it?
I really liked it.
I don't care. I don't want it.
No, I will never try.
Anyway, Hell Pizza, where you know you microwave your pizza for just enough to be slightly cold than room temperature.
Yes. And then you put yogurt on it.
And you put yogurt on it.
30 seconds something. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Camille.
That was a pleasure, guys.
I don't know that I can ever look at you the same way, especially if you're holding a yogurt.
I thought you would mention Elden Ring.
That's a piping hot yogurt right there.
Ooh, but
if you've got questions, you can email frenziedquestions@gmail.com. That's really, you can also go on our Facebook page.
Facebook page. YouTube, commenting on our YouTube is a good way to interact with us.
Yep.
That's basically the main way, really.
I would read out a question, but the...
But you threw the tablet away?
The tablet died.
Oh, did it?
Yeah. Someone didn't charge it.
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Half an hour before the podcast was like, oh no, I forgot to charge it.
It's on 3%. It'll be fine. Yeah. But we'll be back, ideally, in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Yep.
We often say that, and then often there's like a month and a half gap.
Sometimes last one was life Christmas gets in the way, man.
Stuff, so.
Yeah, some people buy houses. Yeah. Some people have family.
Yeah,
not me though.
I mean, you've got both.
Yeah, you've got both.
Yeah, I did it both already.
Blake just gets someone else who can argue about Elden Ring technique.
Yeah, this was an idea of like maybe we should just have guests on a rotating cast of guests all year who just love Elden Ring. And
there's
just
enough people in office.
Yeah, as far as I can tell, that is
for a year.
Case. Yeah, for a year. Yeah, I think we can do it.
Boy. You know what? Bring it on. I know I'm right.
No, you're doing fine. Depending. Yeah,
I know I'm right. All right. We'll be back in a couple weeks. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
More immersive than Baldur's Gate.
I mean more than actual story and Elden Ring. More of what happens.
Oh, is it like the emergent gameplay, basically? Yeah.
Emergent, not immersive.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sure. Even then, I don't know. Like, I was talking to Blake, and I think that the best part of Elden Ring is like the first third of that game. And that it gets worse and worse the further you go in.
Hmm.
Like, the first dungeon, awesome. The exploration of that area is amazing. You can climb along the eaves of the buildings. You can drop down. There's all these different places you can go. There's like this deep area with like a secret boss and all sorts of cool stuff. Compare it to like the mansion, like the fire manor, whatever it's called, the volcanic area. Very little exploration. Like it's much
that
more.
That was weird.
And there's like a secret area you can get to, but only through a different dungeon.
Yeah.
And then like it seems like the exploration gets worse and worse the deeper you go.
Like Lindell, I think that's the name of this capital.
Lindell, yeah.
That's like at least second half. That's you don't get there too quickly.
Sure.
And I feel that was such an incredible experience.
Yeah, I really like it.
And on the many levels, because from one hand you've got a capital, this main surface. Then you have
the sewers.
Sewers, and then out under the sewers you've got even deeper things. Have you...
I did the sewers. You
got catacombs.
I did some catacombs there, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
But the thing is that you the main thing is that on the surface the city is sure. It's amazing and like
and
style
above the city as well.
Yes.
In terms of
But
even then, I felt like it was kind of a shallow experience, even compared to the first dungeon. Like, in the first dungeon, there's like chambers you can go into. Like you can go inside the buildings. There's like a dining room with like a scion. Like a grafted scion.
Places you go into in the city as well. Granted,
less. And then there are also areas that you couldn't access that, but you could see, like the sewers. There's like a separate area in the sewers. Like if you go down the main road of Langdell, there's a big sewer grate.
Yeah.
You can't go back. You can't go in there until you've progressed past and returned.
Okay.
The sewer stuff is there's a huge difficulty spike. When you go down into the sewers. So you kind of, it's not really, you're not meant to go there immediately. You're meant to kind of come back again.
I don't know, like, you've got some of those knights of the heavy bows.
Yeah.
Snipers. And then you go to sewers, and I felt like most... Yeah, they're annoying, but... depend on what you play. Like, if you can stagger them well, then they're almost, like, defenseless.
Sure.
I mean, yeah, I think it's like the really like everyone's experience can be very much different, and which is great. But I have a question: what do you think about the like art style? How you feel about it? Because I know that you love
I
the
think art direction is amazing.
Okay.
The art direction is phenomenal. Okay. I think the way the world looks, the way each like scene is composed, the way the bosses look, the animations are.
That one in the basement.
Which one?
That big tentacle thing that. Flies around. And...
Yeah, well, that's one of the things I don't like about that game is they talk about how many bosses they have, and then like you start to say boss like five times, and that's one of them. The ulcerated tree spirit.
I think I'm quite subjective with this game because that art style, the world building, it's just affect I'm that sort of person. If I like some core pillars, my favorite ones, I can forgive some other things.
When it comes to design.
Like specifically none of those quests because it's like I don't get informed, I don't get enough information, but in the same time it's not like those things does not exist.
They
are there, which is great. It's just it's annoying to discover that mostly from your friends community or some websites, but the reason why I think this game is one of the best games of the decade is simply because if you use those extra sources and you're still freaking excited, that's why.
Different experience for me. For me, it was a chore. Okay. It was like if I play without a guide.
Yeah.
It
is. Yeah, I agree.
I can play pretty well. Like, but then. There's vast amounts I will miss out on. And there's like, you idiot, why didn't you just do this thing that you have to read a guide to do?
Do you usually like 100% down?